May it please the court, I'm Brent Case, attorney registration number 36623 for Appellant Intermountain Rural Electric Association. With your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal at the conclusion.
Keep time on the digital clock yourself.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honors, this is a case in which the commissioners of the Public Utilities Commission violated the open meetings law by meeting to discuss and form a position on the proposed Clean Air, Clean Jobs Act. IRDA is asking this court to reverse the district court's order in favor of defendants on the party's cross motion for summary judgment and grant IRDA summary judgment. Now, as far as legal issues in this case, the district court has already decided that the emails in question were gatherings under the OML, and that has not been challenged in this proceeding. The only issue is whether they were gatherings to discuss public business, and as I'll explain in my argument, they indeed were. Both parties acknowledge that this issue is controlled by the Castilla County case. Now, the rule of law in that case is that if the record supports the conclusion that the meeting is rationally connected to the policymaking responsibilities of the public body holding or attending the meeting, then the meeting is subject to the OML. Now, defendants in their briefs tried to trivialize this holding by calling it offhanded or a mere turn of phrase. But in fact, it wasn't. The subsequent Colorado Supreme Court case that the defendant cited, Barber, recited the same sort of rule and just said that the content of the meeting had to be simply related to the policy function, with no modifier whatsoever, not even rationally related, simply related. Now, the error in this case was that the district court limited the rule to what the subject of the meeting has to involve the discussion or the undertaking of one of the actions enumerated in the remedy provisions of the OML, such as adopting a rule, regulation, ordinance, or formal action. That was a mistake. That was a misreading of Castilla County.
By who?
By the district court. And the reason why that was the district court looked at some language in that case, but it failed to take into account that the Colorado Supreme Court was using the rule, regulation, ordinance, or formal action measures as just examples. And if you read the Castilla County opinion closely, it says that such a link, the rational connection, exists, for example, when the discussion concerns one of the actions discussed there. For example, if the subject of the meeting had to be strictly limited to those four conditions, then the court would have no reason to say, for example. The court would have no reason to explain earlier that all that's needed is a rational connection.
So what is your definition of what the PUC's public policy function is in this that is specific to this case?
Well, I think it's undisputed in this case, Your Honor, that the PUC's policymaking responsibilities concern its regulation of public utilities in Colorado.
That's way too broad, isn't it? I mean, that's everything that they do, right? I mean, that could be ordering pencils for the office. That has to do with their regulatory function, doesn't it?
Well,
so, I mean, there's got to be some kind of limit on that.
Well, yes, Your Honor. I mean, it's something, of course, more specific than ordering pencils for the office, but it's regulating public utilities such as Xcel, regulating their rates, regulating their business practices. I mean, that's one of the specific policymaking responsibilities of the PUC, and I bring that up because what they were doing in this case, the meetings that they held, specifically related to that policymaking responsibility.
Does the PUC have any authority or ability to enact legislation?
No, Your Honor, they don't.
So what? I don't see how this relates to the policymaking function of the PUC. I understand it's policy that's involved, and I understand that the legislation were adopted, it would affect rate making, but how does that relate in any way to the PUC's policymaking function?
Well, Your Honors, let me give kind of I'll circle back with you. I'm going to give kind of a lengthy answer to that question, but so what the PUC commissioners were discussing was the proposed Clean Air, Clean Jobs Act. And what the act does is that it requires each Colorado rate-regulated utility to submit an emission reduction plan to the PUC. And the act would require the PUC to undertake an evidentiary hearing to approve or deny the plan that's submitted to them. The PUC is also required by that act to consider the reasonableness of the costs and the cost recovery mechanisms. So what was in the content of these meetings? And it's undisputed, Your Honor, that everyone has accepted the district court's description of these emails. The district court said something to the effect of beginning about 3 months before the governor's signature on the act and ending about 1 month before it, the members of the PUC engaged in a series of 19 emails in which they engaged in frank discussions about the proposed act and its impact on the PUC's rulemaking and rate setting authority. All the commissioners actively participated in these emails, and they exchanged views and recommendations about the specific proposed language. So essentially, I think it's undisputed that what the act was going to require the PUC to do most definitely relates to their policymaking responsibilities. And Castilla County says that all you need is a rational connection. And so talking about legislation that impacts the way that the PUC regulates utilities is most certainly rationally related.
What if the bill didn't pass?
It's still related.
How could it be related? It had no impact on there.
Because, Your Honor, the PUC is discussing ways in which potential legislation would affect their policymaking authority. I mean, they are simply discussing their policymaking authority. If there has never been a more plain connection to a discussion of policymaking authority than what the PUC did here.
There's never been a more plain? I mean, what about when they exchange emails about the rates that are going to be charged for a pending rate-making proceeding? Wouldn't that obviously be much more related than what you're talking about?
Well, you're right, Your Honor. Perhaps I overreached. But the reason why I said that is because the rule is that if the discussion concerns the policymaking authority, then it's subject to the OML. And the PUC was discussing their policymaking authority.
Let me ask you a question. There's a provision that I don't think either one of you addressed in the statute, Section 246402. 2D Roman numeral 3, which says if elected officials, and I realize the PUC are not elected officials, but it says if elected officials use electronic mail to discuss pending legislation or other public business among themselves, the electronic mail shall be subject to the requirements of this section. Does that provide support for your argument that pending legislation is public business?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's sort of irrelevant to our argument because I view that part of the statute as more relating to whether or not the meetings were gatherings, and it's undisputed that they were.
Thank you.
What is your position on the legal significance, if any, of the fact that a member of the governor's staff was a party to many, if not most, of these emails, and perhaps was the person who generated the discussion in the first place? Does that have any legal significance to the issue in front of us?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think the defendants would argue that that has to do with the deliberative process privilege, which, first of all, we don't agree that applies. But second of all, if the defendants are saying that the deliberative process does apply, then in order for that privilege to count, the underlying discussion has to concern pre-decision making. And so it evidences that the PUC was actually making a decision. And let me get to that end. Some additional admissions that are in the record that are discussed in the appellant's brief but are ignored in the defendant's brief is that Chairman Benz of the PUC admitted that in these discussions, the commissioner signed off on language addressing long-term gas purchase contracts. He admitted that the agreed upon language should be sent onward to Excel. And he admitted that the commission, the PUC, and Excel have agreed on language for cost recovery. When did these agreements occur? Well, these PUC agreements most definitely occurred in the emails. There's nothing in the record to suggest that the PUC got together and made these agreements in some other meeting, which would also be violative of the OML, by the way. Let me get back to one important.
So the PUC agrees with Excel, you're saying, or PSCO on something. But that doesn't have any impact at all on whether the legislature adopts the statute, does it?
No, that's true. But what it does have some impact on, Your Honor, is, you know, this was a situation in which the the PUC was having meetings involving active consideration of language being proposed by Xcel. The primary utility who would be affected by this act and regulated by the PUC pursuant to it, concerning the methods, the very methods in which the PUC would regulate Xcel. I mean, there's some significance to that. I mean, we're talking about, does this relate to policymaking authority? Well, the act is concerning how the PUC is going to regulate electric utilities, including Xcel. And in these meetings, the PUC is admitting that they have come to agreement with Xcel about language for the act that concerns the PUC's regulation of Xcel. It strongly relates to the PUC's policymaking authority. Now, let me draw one distinction, or several distinctions in this case, between what happened in Castilla County, where the Supreme Court held that the meeting was not the subject, or was not subject to the OML, and what happened here. In Castilla County, someone else called the meeting, and the members of the board in that case essentially just showed up to the meeting. In Castilla County, the board never had any business related to the subject of the meeting, either before or after the meeting in question. And in Castilla County, the members didn't participate or take part in any discussion. They listened passively and they simply ate their dinner. The opinion actually says that. Now, and what happened in this case is markedly different than what happened in Castilla County. While the Castilla County board in question was passive, the PUC in these meetings were active. They made decisions. While somebody else called the meeting in Castilla County, the PUC called their own meeting here. While the Castilla County board never had business regarding the subject of the meeting, the PUC knew it would, or if the act passed, it knew it would, and discussed that very business. The Castilla County board had no duties related to the meetings, and PUC in their briefing in some of the litigation that relates to this matter has admitted that commissioner participation in the legislative process is inherent in their duty. So this, if they call this participation in the legislative process, this was one of their duties. I mean, it's markedly different than what happened in Castilla County, and the district court erred by analogizing the two.
Mr. Case, I don't want to interrupt you, but you've got a little less than 3 minutes, but you can go ahead at your
discretion. Yes, I'm going to take 30 more seconds here to move myself with only two. In the alternative, I want to make clear that while the Castilla County does not require that a formal action have been taken in order for the meeting to be subject to the OML, IRA's position is that they did one.
Is that undisputed, or is that a disputed fact?
It is disputed, Your Honor.
So if that's a disputed fact... If that's a disputed fact, what's the status of a summary judgment order then?
Well, the facts underlying, whether or not it's a formal action is more of a legal conclusion. The facts underlying it are not disputed. So with that, I'm going to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Erin Overturf, counsel for the Public Utilities Commission, and my attorney registration number is 40187. In this case, the parties seek a determination as to whether the PUC commissioners violated the open meetings law when they discussed a piece of proposed legislation with the Office of the Governor. This court should affirm the district court's order for two reasons. First, because the email conversation was not part of the PUC's policymaking process, and therefore it is not a gathering subject to the open meetings law under the Colorado Supreme Court's holding in Costilla County. And second, because no formal action was undertaken in the emails, and therefore no violation of the OML occurred. Turning to the PUC's first argument, the emails did not constitute a meeting under Costilla County.
Excuse me, counsel, can I just interrupt at the outset, because I want to make sure that I understand the total framework here. Is it correct that you are not challenging the district court's finding that this was a gathering?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
So now the question is whether that gathering is convened to discuss public business under Costilla County. And in the fact pattern of Costilla County, a quorum of the Board of County Commissioners attended a gathering convened to discuss a local mine's efforts to comply with state environmental regulations. At the time of the gathering, the board had no pending business related to the mine. However, I would disagree with counsel for IREA with regard to the facts of that case. The county commissioners, the county did undertake some action related to the mine and the subject of that meeting after the meeting occurred. Now, the Colorado Supreme Court held this gathering did not violate the open meetings law because it was not part of the board's policy-making process. And the court went on to state, and I quote, a meeting is part of the policy-making process when the meeting is held for the purpose of discussing or undertaking a rule, regulation, ordinance, or formal action.
Counsel, your adversary suggested that was merely, those are merely given as examples. What's your response to that?
Well, it's interesting, Your Honor. At various times in the language of Costilla County, sometimes those are listed as examples, and sometimes they're listed as an exclusive list. You'll find the same thing in two different places in the opinion. So I think it's both exist in the opinion. I think that even if this court were to find that those are examples of things that are subject to or related to the public policymaking function of the entity, that what they do is identify actions of a certain caliber. And even if they are examples, the conversation that existed here did not rise to that caliber because it was not something that the PUC could have taken formal action on even if it wanted to.
If I could just ask you, I'm sorry. A question similar to what I asked your adversary. At section 2D3 about elected officials, that seemed to make clear that if elected officials use electronic mail to discuss pending legislation, it's subject to the requirements of the section. Is there a negative inference that if a discussion is not involving pending legislation is not among elected officials, that does not constitute something that's subject to the act?
That's one of the arguments that the PUC put forward at the district court level in support of its argument that these emails were not a gathering. But I would agree with Mr. Case that that's irrelevant in terms of deciding whether that gathering is subject.
The issue, you think, goes, your position is the issue goes solely to whether or not there's a gathering?
With regard to that specific provision, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to inquire about some other language in Costilla County. Mr. Case seems to disagree with you a little bit on the reading of, or obviously disagree with
yes.
you, on the reading of Costilla County, and says that the language says that the meeting has to be rationally related to the body's public or policy making responsibilities rather than a part of the body's public or policy making responsibilities. I also see that there's language in the case that says the record must demonstrate a meaningful connection between the meeting itself and the policy making powers of the public body. Do you see any distinction between rationally related and meaningful connection? Are those words significant or not?
Sure. I think it's less about rationally connected and what we're being rationally connected to. So I think the parties absolutely agree that there has to be a connection to something that has to do with the policymaking functions of the board. The PUC would argue that it has to be connected to the process of making policy, the PUC's actions that make policy. And you'll notice that IREA stated that the PUC's policy-making function, how it defines that, is the process of regulating public utilities. And if that's the case, which seems like a reasonable example or definition, then if you look at the conversation here, no one was regulated as a result of these conversations. No regulation was enacted. No rule was imposed on utilities that are regulated by the PUC. So if we look at it being rationally connected, even if we adopt that phrase, which there are other phrases in the case, which Your Honor points out, I think it still has to be related to the process of policymaking. And this is consistent with other ways in which courts have interpreted the open meetings law. For instance, in Bagby versus School District, the Colorado Supreme Court held that pre-meetings where an entity discussed and essentially came to a decision on something in private before discussing it again in a public setting, that violated the open meetings law because the conversation was something that they had the authority to act on and they were prejudging things. Now, the PUC doesn't question that if in the course of these emails, the commissioners had decided how they were going to rule on a pending rate case, or if they had stated how they were going to rule on the application when it did come before them, if the legislation passed, that would undoubtedly be a violation of the open meetings law. But that's not what occurred here. The PUC commissioners were discussing proposed legislation that had not even yet been introduced. And ultimately, whatever suggestions it gave to the Office of the governor was free to disregard, ignore, or otherwise pay no mind to. So the PUC had no authority to act with regards to the contents of those emails. The legislation, when it was finally introduced, contained suggestions or language that may have been proposed by the PUC commissioners, but the General Assembly had the exclusive authority to make the final policy decision about what the language of that bill would contain. And I would just like to point out before I turn to the PUC's next argument that this, the Costilla County analysis, is a threshold determination. So if the emails are not part of the policymaking process of the PUC, then they are exempt from the open meetings law under Costilla County, and IRE's entire case must fail. The formal action argument is not an alternative argument. The formal action analysis only applies if these meetings are subject to the open meetings law. So that brings me to the PUC's second argument, which is that no formal action was undertaken in these emails. Assuming the open meetings law does apply under the Costilla County analysis, IREA goes on to argue that these emails constitute an improper formal action of the PUC. Now, IREA puts forward two reasons why these emails constitute a formal action, and both of those rationales should be rejected by this court. First, IREA argues that the emails contain the PUC's position on the act. Now, this is not a formal action in the PUC's understanding of the open meetings law. Formal action is not defined by the open meetings law, but the PUC would posit that in order for something to be a formal action of a public entity, it needs to be among those enumerated duties that the entity has the power to act upon. It has to be something that's binding, that has legal effect, and therefore something that's reversible, something that can be remedied by the open meetings law.
So let me interrupt you and give you a hypothetical.
Sure.
Let's say that three commissioners are having breakfast one morning together, and one of them pulls out an article in the Denver Post and says, "Did you guys read this article about this proposed legislation? It's really kind of interesting and kind of relates to stuff that we're doing." So they all talk about it a little bit over breakfast, and then they tell one of the commissioners, "Well, why don't you call up Senator so and so and tell him we've chatted about this and we're kind of interested in the bill and this is where we think it ought to go." Is that a formal action?
No, it isn't, Your Honor.
Why not?
For the same reasons this isn't a formal action here, because the provision of an opinion to another entity that actually has policymaking authority isn't binding on anyone. It's something that the Senator or the General Assembly has the authority to disregard. It doesn't have any impact on their authority. The PUC would posit that in order for something to be a formal action, it must be something that is within the entity's enumerated powers. So here it would be the issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity, or the approval of certain rules, or ruling on a PUC rate case. Those would all be formal actions of the Public Utilities Commission. But offering opinions, which have no binding effect on anyone, is not a formal action, in part because it's incapable of being reversed. And I would point, Your Honors, to the remedy provision of the Open Meetings Law, which states that the remedy for a violation is reversing whatever formal action was improperly taken at the unnoticed meeting. Now, if providing an opinion is a formal action, the PUC questions how, as a practical matter, that can ever be reversed. It can't be undone once that bell has been rung, and it's unclear whether it had any actual impact in the first place.
First mean first in a judicial proceeding or reversed by the public body itself?
I would argue that it has to be something that can be reversed by either I think, Your Honor. Here, IRA argues that the PUC could have reversed itself in going back to the governor and taking back what it had said. I'm not sure that that constitutes an effective reversal of communicating that whatever position it may have been in the first point. And if that's the case, if that is the remedy, unsaying something to the governor, then this case was moot when it was filed, because the timing, the bill had long since been signed by the time this action was filed. This brings me to IREA's second argument with regards to a formal action, which is that the emails are a formal action because they culminated in PUC Director Doug Dean's testimony before the legislature, where he stated that the PUC did not oppose the act. Now, the PUC would argue that testimony before the legislature, much like proffering opinions to the executive, can never constitute a formal action because it's not binding and it's not reversible. However, even assuming that that is capable of being a formal action, that it could in some instances be a formal action, there's nothing in the record that supports IREA's argument. Mr. Dean was not copied on any of the 18 emails at issue in this case. There's no evidence in the record that any of those emails were forwarded to him or that the content of those emails was otherwise communicated to Mr. Dean. And further fact-finding on this issue would be necessary before summary judgment could possibly be granted in IREA's favor. Therefore, we disagree with IREA's position that there's no disputed issue of material fact with regard to whether a formal action occurred here.
How does that affect your motion for summary judgment?
It doesn't, Your Honor. There's no material facts that's needed, no additional material facts that are needed in order to support the PUC's legal arguments. The foundation of Mr. Dean's testimony is wholly immaterial to the PUC's arguments concerning the applicability of Costilla County. Finally, with my time that's remaining, I would just like to point out a few citations that are contained in IREA's reply brief. IREA states that providing opinions to the legislature is among the PUC's formal duties because communications regarding legislation are mentioned in both Title 40, which controls the PUC, and in the PUC's rules. And I would just like to bring something concerning those citations to Your Honor's attention. 46.122.5, which IREA cites in its brief, concerns commissioners' discussions of pending legislative proposals and states that those conversations are not subject to the ex parte communication requirements that otherwise the commissioners are otherwise bound by. And I would just like to point out a few things. First of all, that statutory provision has nothing to do with whether those interactions would constitute violations of the open meetings law. It does not establish that conversations concerning legislation are among the formal actions of the PUC. And in fact, the district court got this right when it distinguished the PUC who may participate in providing those types of opinions and contrasted it with other state entities where the provision of those types of opinions is among the formal duties of the public entity, such as, for example, the Attorney General's office. And second, IREA quotes PUC Rule 1105B4, which identifies legislation as among communications that are not prohibited as improper ex parte communications. Now, again, that rule does not stand for the proposition that those communications are formal actions. In fact, when you look at that rule, it lists other and things that are certainly not formal actions of the commission, such as educational programs and budget matters. Those are communications that are clearly outside the scope of the policy-making function of the PUC, and therefore supports actually the PUC's position that those are not subject to the open meetings law. In conclusion, Your Honors, the PUC would argue that the district court got it right when it held that because the legislation had not yet passed, there was no formal action the PUC intended to take, did take, or indeed could have taken as a product of this email exchange, just as there was nothing the county commissioners in Costilla County could do about the mine's compliance with state regulations. And because the emails were not subject to the open meetings law, the PUC respectfully asks that the district court's decision granting summary judgment in its favor be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Over. Case, you got 1 minute and 49 seconds.
Your Honor, let me begin by disagreeing with council's disagreement with me about what Castillo County says. In footnote 2 on page 1190 of that opinion, the Supreme Court specifically notes that the subsequent donation of the Battle Mountain related to the settlement agreement with CDPHE was, there was nothing in the record indicating that that agreement was ever discussed or voted on by the board. So there was, I was right the first time, there was no board business in that case. And that, and by the way, that the Castillo County Court, in when deciding that the meetings were not subject to the OML, says that the reason why is because the subject of the meeting was unconnected to the county board's policymaking authority. So unconnected, you know, that sort of leads one to believe that a connection, a meaningful connection, a relation, things like that, those are what suffices to make the OML apply. Now, what council suggested about saying that the PUC getting together on to discuss legislation wouldn't be covered by the OML, you know, what happened in this case is that they got together and agreed about what should be in the bill. And not only that, but as a result of negotiations with the very entity that would be subject to the bill. Now, saying that the OML doesn't apply in that instance would shut the public out, which from a proceeding like that, which is very obviously related to the policymaking authority and goes against the very purpose, the very stated purpose of the OML, is to allow the public to look into this this process. With that, Your Honor, my time's expiring. I had a lot more to say, but.
Thank you, Mr. Case. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course.